Welcome to an all-new episode of Get Lit with Leanna, the podcast. Join me as I sit down with a new guest author in each episode to discuss their books, careers, and everything in between. Today, I sit down with romance author Timothy Janofsky to talk about his new book, New Adult. I loved getting to chat with Timothy. I was so not expecting this conversation. I don't know what I was expecting or thinking, like where this would go. We had such a fun chat about all of his books, his writing history, but specifically with this book, New Adult, since there's so much in it, it packs such a punch and it has an element of like magic and a time jump. So there was a lot of like technical things that we had to hash out. This was such a fun episode. I actually adore him beyond belief. I'm so excited for you to hear about what he has happening next, because I think all of you like spicy romance readers will be very intrigued. So without further ado, my conversation with the very sweet and very, very funny Timothy Janofsky starts right now. Welcome, Timothy, to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, this is like so exciting. And I feel like such a long time coming, because obviously I've like known about your books for like quite some time now. So I'm really happy like the stars aligned and we were able to make it happen for this book. But obviously, by the time this podcast comes out, New Adult will be out in the world. So first and foremost, how are you feeling being so close to pub date now?
Oh, I'm excited. I think this one is the most whimsical of the books that I've written so far, and also probably the most, I want to say, close to my heart. So I'm like excited to have it on a shelf or like on someone's Kindle and to know that they can like take it. I just think that's exciting. Yeah. So that they can throw it in their bag and take it to the beach or wherever they're going and read it.
100%. So there's so many parts of this story that I really, really loved. And obviously we're going to get into it. But before we talk about this book in particular, I'd love to know just like a bit more about you and like how all of this started. Like, how did you become an author? How did you get a publishing deal? Like, tell me, take me back.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So it goes back a little far, actually. So okay. I decided I wanted to be an author when I was like 15. I was like, I'm going to have a book. It's going to be out there. I swear to you. And I had always been like writing stories and stuff like that. And so at like 16, I had written what I considered a manuscript. Okay. And my dad had a coworker whose wife worked in publishing, and she was like very kind to like answer my emails and tell me like, this is how you become an author. And she was like, first thing you got to do is you got to get an agent. And so I think like the summer between maybe like junior and senior year of high school, I sent out like query letters to hundreds and hundreds of agents, because I was just like, I want a book. And I got a couple of responses, and one of them was from a literary agent that like I really admired. She represented a lot of people that I really enjoyed. But her assistant just emailed me back and was like, wow, so impressive that you wrote a book at 16. Like, here's a bunch of edits you can make to make it better. We wish you so much luck. Okay. And me at 16 with no critical thinking skills emailed back and was like, thank you so much for your response. Here's all the reasons I won't be making those edits because I wrote it the way I wrote it.
Oh my God.
I wouldn't do that now, per se. And then so like the head of the agency emailed me and was like, I want to meet you. Come to my office. Like, can you get to New York City? I was like, yes, I can get to New York City.
Oh my God.
And I remember my dad dropping me off and being like, she's probably going to yell at you. So just be aware that it's probably not going to be like a great whatever. And so he dropped me off at the office and she was like, no, I think you have spunk. Like, I like you. I think like, I can teach you how to structure your book, like to make it stronger. But she was like, I can't teach you how to have thick skin and stand up for your work, because half of this business is just perseverance. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of took me under her wing and gave me writing advice and craft advice. And we were in business together for quite a while. And then I went to college and life got in the way, but basically around 2020, when COVID hit, I had been working as an actor and a dance teacher and stuff like that, but like all those businesses shut down.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of home and looking for a comfort project. And I was like, I had been writing, but just not as frequently. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to write the Christmas novel that like I've always wanted to write, because that will give me comfort. So I ended up writing what would become Your Mean One, Matthew Prince. And the stars just kind of aligned because my editor had put out a tweet that I had seen being like, oh my God, I loved Happiest Season, but I wish it was told from Dan Levy's perspective. Like, we need the sequel. And I was like, I wrote that. And so I'm frantically emailing my agent, like, you have to email this to her. Like, this is it. This is the book deal. And it was the book deal.
And yeah. It was the second book you published, right?
Yeah. So
like, tell me about that. That's so interesting that it was like the first book that you kind of got out, but it wasn't the first one that actually made it into people's hands.
Yeah, it was a little weird because they came to us with the offer and then were like, we know that like Christmas is a smaller market. Like we would like you to debut to as many readers as possible. Like, is there anything else you might want to write? And so I had been going to the drive-in a lot during COVID because it was the only safe way to see movies.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, like, let me go back to that like latent childhood crush on Danny Zuko in the drive-in. And I was like, I would really like to write a drive-in book. Like, and so together with my editor, we kind of conceptualized what became Never Been Kissed, which is actually contains a lot of nuggets of a YA book that I had worked on a while before and that she had read and stuff like that. So we kind of pulled all that stuff together and I ended up writing Never Been Kissed on contract and then going back and editing Matthew Prince. And they were supposed to come out like a year apart, but then calendars changed and things happened and they were like, do you just want to put out two books? And I was like, I mean,
yeah,
let's do it.
I feel like you're just like on that trajectory. Like obviously New Adult is coming out now and then you have another book coming out like in the fall. So like, I feel like, right, it's the fall. Yeah.
Well, I have this one out now or coming out now. And then I have one in January.
Yeah. Okay. So, but you're like really pushing them out like quite quickly. Do you feel the pressure now or are you just like loving it? Because obviously this is like a relatively new thing since COVID that you've been doing. Like how do you feel with like the timelines of all of this?
I think one of the things that I have always enjoyed most, like coming from theater and dance and stand-up comedy and all this stuff, it's just that like I like telling stories. Like I think they're such a good way to connect with people. And like I have made so many friends, author friends, reader friends, whatever, through writing these books. And so like, I found that so gratifying. And like, when it comes to putting out more and more books and doing these timelines, I'm learning about myself, like what works for me, when's the best time to sit down, what inspires me the most, how long do I need to prep before I actually write the book, things like that. Whereas like, I personally feel like when I got my publishing deal, we were kind of on the start of the upward trajectory of like LGBTQ romance mm-hmm. becoming a larger thing within romance in general. And now it feels like more and more voices are coming into the mix, which I love. Mm-hmm. And so like when publishers, so specifically like the book that I have out in January, it's called The Fake Dating Game. An editor at Harlequin had read Never Been Kissed and approached me and was like, hey, like we're looking to launch this new line geared towards younger readers, high heat. Would you be interested in writing something for us? And like, as an author, that's really very gratifying and sweet to be like, oh my gosh, you enjoyed my work so much that you want more of it. And like, I just kind of want to ride that wave. It feels a little bit like that Taylor Swift moment in the Miss Americana documentary where she's like, you know, I got to hold on to this while it's here because,
you never know.
So yeah. I just want to tell as many stories as I can for as long as publishing will have me. And then we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like your star is like so hot right now. And like, it's just going to keep writing, like shining brighter and brighter. And I feel like every few months I like reload like Goodreads, like what's coming out next, like give me an update. And like there's always a book by you on these lists and I love that for you because clearly everyone's really, really enjoying them, really resonating with them. And they're every book has been so sweet and so like swoony, but they're so funny. Like I just love the way you write. And I'm just curious because I think I read that like New Adult in particular is like the third book in a series, correct? But like each one is a standalone. Can you explain to me, like, just because I actually am so naive and I don't really understand, like what is like that series and how come now you've chosen to like end it and kind of start something different?
Well, so I think what I mean, the short answer is that, like, in publishing, because of the way that online retailers have really taken over the way people buy and find books, like, it is helpful when a series name and idea is attached to a collection of books by the same author, because the algorithm benefit, like, you get benefits from that. So, like, okay, if someone goes and buys New Adult, they're going to see Never Been Kissed and Matthew Prince immediately linked to those books, even if they're not, like, bestsellers at the time or what have you.
Okay.
As opposed to, like, having to go find me as an author. But when we were talking about creating Never Been Kissed, and then when I ended up pitching New Adult, my editor and I were talking a lot about New Adult fiction in general, and how it's still, I don't want to say it's, like, taboo, but it is, like, a word in publishing that I think publishing professionals feel a little burned by, because there was a period where they were really pushing for it and it never really found its home, and nobody really has the same definition for it.
Yeah.
And so my editor was like, what is it about new adult fiction that is appealing to you? And I was like, you know, to reference more Taylor Swift, but I was like, I want to capture the happy, free, confused, and lonely feelings. Like, that is kind of what I want to put in these books. And so there are, like, Easter eggs. Like, if you read Never Been Kissed and then you read Matthew Prince, there's Easter eggs for Never Been Kissed. Then if you read Matthew Prince and read New Adult, there's Easter eggs from Matthew Prince over into New Adult. So they're just, like, little fun things, like, in the way that, like, Emily Henry does all the time, where she, like, you know, ties the books with the book title and the characters. But, like, overall, it's that those themes and feelings of being, like, in your early 20s and not really knowing what the world is going to look like yet. And also understanding for readers that, like, happily ever after in a new adult novel is definitely a happy for now. Like, these characters are going to grow and change. And, like, I mean, Nolan and Drew to me are forever and ever together, you know, like, just creating these couples and stuff like that has been exciting for me. But yeah, anyway, I wanted to end on new adult specifically because I felt like it perfectly encapsulated this idea of, like, being in your early 20s and being scared of the future and who you might become, and then getting a glimpse of what that life might be like, and realizing that your early 20s are really influential in the person you're going to become. Yeah. And I think it was funny too, because the book's working title was actually the same as Ashley Poston's most recent, The 7 Year Slip.
No,
that was, like, the working title of the book. And my editor was like, I think we should call it New Adult, because it's like that beach read effect, right? Like, when people go and Google beach read, they get Emily Henry, right? And that's a beach read. You take it to the beach with you. She was like, I want people to Google new adult fiction and see your book in their face, because this is what I believe new adult fiction is.
Yeah.
And so I just was like, let's do it. And so it just felt like the perfect note to kind of close that chapter on, and then to move on to, I don't know, spicier, whimsical stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Love, love, love to hear that. And it's an incredible marketing ploy naming this book New Adult, because, like, now every time you look up, like, New Adult, like, romance, like, that's going to be the first thing that comes up. So it's a very, like, tactical approach. But I guess now we should just, like, get into the actual book. So before we go any further, I know this is, like, the most despised question ever, but can you give listeners, like, a little synopsis about what your new book's about?
Yeah. So New Adult tells the story of Nolan Baker. He is a struggling stand-up comedian in New York City. And basically, he makes a series of not so great decisions that lead him to come into possession of a set of magical healing crystals. He's kind of irrevocably messed up his life, and he decides, like, I'm just going to take a leap of faith. I'm going to wish to skip to the good part of life. He wakes up 7 years in the future with everything he's ever wanted, fame and success in comedy, a corgi named Milkshake, this beautiful apartment, except he realizes that his family won't take his calls, and his best friend Drew and his, like, big lifetime love hates his guts. And so now he needs to figure out what happened in the intervening 7 years to make all this, you know, come to be. But he also needs to figure out a way back to his original timeline so he can make amends. There's hijinks and kissing and a nefarious wellness company hiding in the background of all of this. And so, yeah, that's basically New Adult in a nutshell.
It's so friggin' great. And when I was reading it, so I, like, I'm a kind of the person that will either like read a synopsis and read a fuck ton of reviews before I read a book, or I go in so damn blind. And I started reading your book while I was in a swimming pool, and I only had my Kobo with me. I didn't have like my phone to like start searching, whatever. So I went into it totally blind. Like I didn't really know what anything to expect. I didn't know what the synopsis was. Like I really didn't know much. And I'm starting to read it, and once like the time jump happens, I was like, this is literally 13 going on 30. And then only after, and that's kind of how far I got in that one like reading session. And then I got out of the pool, whatever, and I'm looking up the book and I'm like, oh my God, like it actually is. Like people are talking about this. Like it's actually inspired by 13 going on 30. And that's seriously one of my favorite movies of all time. So tell me about like the inspiration behind the story and the decision to kind of use similar tropes or parts of that movie in this book.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's one of my favorite movies of all time too. I have like a vivid memory of being, I don't even know how old I was when it came out, but like I was on a family vacation. Like it was my family reunion. We were in a hotel. I remember like sitting with a couple of my cousins. We like rented it on the hotel TV back when that was the only place you could rent a movie.
They were like so expensive and you had to like beg your parents, like, can I please have $15 for one movie? Like, yeah.
Yeah, they were like, whatever. Yeah, if that'll keep you quiet for an hour. Yeah, fine. And we watched it. And I remember just being like enamored with this movie and how bubblegum pink it is and how funny Jennifer Garner is. And like, I was not 13, obviously, but I was like still in that phase where I was like, I want to be an adult. I want to be a grown up. I want to be included. I want to stuff like that. And so when it came time to pitch another book, I had always in the back of my mind thought like, oh, I would love to write a book with a time slip element that has an element of magic in it. And kind of with the kind of Boy Meets Boy series, Never Been Kissed has like a lot of elements of You've Got Mail and To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Mm. Matthew Prince has a lot of the elements of Schitt's Creek and like Hallmark Christmas movies. And so when it came time for New Adult, I kind of love to think of like, okay, like what's a piece of media that I love that I can make gay and my own? And so that's kind of where, that's kind of the jumping off point for New Adult. And I also like, I was thinking so much about the idea that like, what if one choice spirals out? How do choices affect the people around us and who we become as a person? And, you know, I've been kind of on a mental health journey since writing Matthew Prince and stuff like that. And so like, I am always learning about myself and things that kind of, God, not to bring it back to Taylor Swift again, but you know, I want to be defined by the things that I love, not the things that I hate, she says. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what like that little outro to Daylight kind of inspired New Adult as well, because he doesn't realize how selfish he is until he wakes up in a future that is so overblown that he doesn't even recognize himself or his life. And I think me as a person, I'm always trying to lead with love. And I always have this kind of fear in the back of my mind sometimes where I'm like, oh no, like, what if I end up being a bad person? And so a way to kind of like exercise myself of that fear was to sit down, write this book, and just kind of have fun with it. Mm-hmm. I also do want to say that like to anyone out there, this is very much a rom-com, but when you watch 13 going on 30, it is so, so comical and light and what have you. But I mean, for the first three books that I've written from the first person present tense. And I was like writing the book, I had pitched it to my editor. I was like, this is going to be so funny. It's going to be great. And then I got to the time jump part and I was like, oh my gosh, this is an existential nightmare. He has no idea what happened in the last 7 years. He has no idea who this man in his bed is. He has no idea how he got there. I was like, this is pretty harrowing, to be honest. And so I remember like writing the book and then sending it to my editor. I was like, I hope it's funny. Like, I hope you like it. I was like, this was just definitely not what I expected when I wrote it. And I think that's both like a strength and no, I just think it's a strength. I think it's a strength of the book that differentiates it from 13 going on 30 because it has a different feel to it. Like it is definitely inspired by, but it's definitely not the same.
Yes, definitely. I can't imagine that like it's easy writing a romance book that feels so real, but adding in these like this massive element of like not believable, not real. Like nobody can time jump. Like it's not a thing. And it happens in movies and it obviously happens in books. But like, how do you as an author try to execute a story to make it so believable under a premise that like just quite literally can't be true?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a kind of a two-part question. In the sense of new adult, I go on, if you ever read my books, you can kind of pinpoint in on something that I'm just utterly obsessed with at the time. So for Never Been Kissed, it was like female film directors, like movies from the 1970s. And this book in particular, I was like really obsessed with like celebrity wellness companies. Like I just was like on this deep dive of listening to podcasts and watching all these videos. Like I just like, and I got really interested in this idea of like a snake oil lawsuit where like a company sells you something where they say like, oh my gosh, it's going to get rid of all your wrinkles. And it's like, it's literally not going to do that. Like they can't do that. And I just remember having this thought being like, wait, what if those things actually did what they're advertised to do? Like, and I just loved this idea that perhaps this wellness company was going to use this like a big marketing like event to like covertly slip magic into the lives of unsuspecting people. So I think like that idea, I kind of wanted to run away with. And then on top of that, like this book, I refer to it as my friends to lovers to enemies to friends to lovers to friends to lovers book, because they chart that course over the book. This was the first book where I wrote it chronologically, but I also wrote it in like weird chunks. So there were like parts of it that like existed and then didn't exist, or I took out and put back in. And so like I think grounding all those magical elements in the central relationships was the way to make it feel the most believable. Like I fell in love with Drew very quickly when I was writing him, and so like and Nolan too, but like I feel like when I was writing the story I was like, oh, these relationships are really rich, and so if I can always bring the scene back to like the human nature of these people, then everything around them is going to kind of feel very much like, oh, that could happen. I mean, I was tagged in a review recently where someone was like, you know, it's not really explained how the time travel works, but like, the more I started reading it, the more I was like, I suppose this could happen. Like, 100%. We have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people could be slipping through time. Like, how would we know? It's not like we're going to believe them if they tell us.
No, it's actually really freaky when you put it like that. Like, it's so true.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've been reading The 7-Year Slip and I've been having that feeling too, because I'm like, oh my gosh, like you have no idea what goes on behind the door of someone else's apartment. Like she could be time traveling. What do I know?
No, it's really scary to think about that, to be honest. It's actually freaking me out. I'm having an existential crisis, like sitting here with you now, but it's just done like so well. And I mean, we spoke about this over DM, but like my life is stand-up comedy. Like it's my favorite thing ever, ever. I worked in stand-up comedy for like 7-8 years. And I just like loved that that's where this story was kind of set in like Nolan's professional life. Why did you choose stand-up? Because I feel like it's not used enough. So that's kind of my first question, I guess, about that aspect of the book.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, since I came from a theater background and I did a lot of performance, like I am always interested in the roads not taken, which is another theme of the book too. But like before COVID happened and I started writing professionally, like became a published author, I was going on auditions, doing commercials, plays, stuff like that. But I was also had a comedy agent who was like, hey, like, are you ever interested in doing like stand-up comedy, things like that. And up until that point, I'd only done like improv, like I did improv in college. And that was kind of my wheelhouse for a while. And I was like, oh, you know, I've never done it, but I would be interested in trying it. She's like, well, you're a good storyteller. Like that's obvious from, you know, your videos that you post online or whatever. You should get a tape together. And so I don't think it comes across to most people, but I am far more introverted than I portray online or whatever. And one of the things that really I find nerve-wracking about the industry of stand-up comedy is how people-forward it is.
Yeah.
Like, you are very much networking and performing, and you are on very much all the time. And I heard that from many a friend who were pursuing the field, and I was like, oh gosh, I don't know that that's for me. But I have always loved a comedian named Maria Bamford, who my partner had introduced me to.
The best. She's so funny. Her comedy to me is like the most like bizarre, but like so interesting. Like I'm a big fan of her both on and off the stage, but yeah, she rocks. I'm a big fan.
She's so funny.
She's so funny.
And she's so like my partner introduced me to her and I was enamored with the special she did that was like just like for her parents in her living room. And so you'll see a new adult, which like kind of comes to fruition where in my personal life, I was like, I'm afraid to go into a club to an open mic. I will get there eventually, but right now I'm not comfortable, but I do need material to send to bookers. What can I do? And so I actually self-funded a special called like Live from My Living Room, which was just me with my friends and family. Like I've made a fake comedy club and I did this stand-up material that I had been working on for a year or whatever.
Oh my God.
And just like put it up on YouTube and I like sent it off to my comedy agent and then COVID happened. And so it didn't really pan out to anything other than like maybe a Verizon commercial at one point, but, or pop-up or I don't even remember what it was. And so I was like, okay. And like, when I sat down to write New Adult, I was like, I wonder what would have happened had I pursued this career. Like, what would that have been like? And so it felt natural to gift Nolan this world because I got to do the research and talk to people. And I basically like got to play pretend in that world for a while. And so I definitely wanted to do that. I also just think that like, I think a lot of people from the audience side think stand-up comedy is easy. Like you just go up there and you talk.
No, like I hate when people think like it's the most like naive thing to think. It is the goddamn hardest thing in the world to do. It is. I don't understand. I mean, I've spoken to a bazillion stand-ups. Like I don't understand how people do it. Like I don't, not only do you have to have all this material prepared and honed and practiced and you're constantly pivoting and then changing it and altering it for specific audiences, but then you have the element of surprise. You don't know what the hell is going to be heckled at you or if you're going to have to start randomly doing crowd work, how things are going to land, who's in the room. Like it is, there's so many elements to it. It is the most, I think, impossible thing. And I think that if anyone close to me said to me, like, I want to try stand up, I would be like, you are the most brave human ever. And I will be in your corner fucking cheering you on the loudest. Cause it's the most impossible thing. It is so damn hard to do.
Yeah. And I think for me, especially because I knew off the bat that like Nolan was always kind of felt overshadowed by his sister who he felt was put together and like always doing the right thing and always getting the best job. Like it made so much sense that like he would have this job that people would think was silly or frivolous or not real, when in actuality he's like being very brave and very vulnerable every time he steps up onto that stage to perform. And I just also really loved this idea that like I love watching stand-up comedy specials and I love seeing a career progress over time. And one of the things that I find super interesting is when like somebody's brand of comedy shifts as they either age or they become really famous or whatever. And so I knew I could use that in the book where it's like in 7 years, like how overblown, how far can I take this like man-child persona that Nolan Baker now is, even though that's not who he is inside.
Yeah.
And I knew it was a good way to like create contrast in the same way that like I showed Drew, who like wants to open a romance bookstore. And then in the future timeline, it's like a creepy murder horror store. Yeah. Like just these ways to show time has passed and people change.
Yeah.
I wanted to play with that.
Yeah. So you had mentioned Nolan's sister. Obviously a huge part of this story is also like that family dynamic. Why did you want to incorporate that part of this storyline into this story? Like, what do you think that his relationship with his parents and his sister kind of, how did that feed into kind of him as a person and also the way he views the world and how he kind of moves through every part of his life.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I think it's so interesting because a lot of times, like, I approach every book, especially when I'm writing from the first person, like it's an acting exercise. Like if I was going to play this character, like what obstacles are in my way? What do I need to learn to grow? Things like that. And so for me, I knew there was going to be this like big wedding element towards the beginning of the book. And that's just a place where like the family dynamics, like come to a boil, right? Like it's going to be an amazing day, but there's going to be a lot of personalities in that room. And I think for me, it was important that I include that because I think where we come from and how we grow up and our relationships, they really influence how we tackle romantic relationships and stuff like that. And so I wanted there to be this element of like, in order for Nolan to accept Drew's love into his life, he needed to also figure out how to accept and mend the relationships in his family that he felt were like oppressive or not serving him, or they were disappointed. Like, I think so in the book, I mean, this is something that I have in my real life too, but like, I always say when I give my character a trait, I say it's a gift, but sometimes it's a hindrance and I'm just making it sound pretty. But like for Nolan, like, you know, he has ADHD, and I, you know, recently was told that I have ADHD. And part of that is this idea of rejection sensitivity. And I was so interested in the fact that like, how could this person get up on stage night after night to perform in front of a crowd and experience rejection at like a 10 time magnification that the normal, not normal, excuse me, but like, you know, a neurotypical person would. Yeah. And so there was a part of that where it's like, oh, it's not that like his parents or his sister are overwhelmingly disappointed in him or they don't believe in him. It's like, it's this care coming out in maybe unproductive ways that he's misinterpreting as rejection. Right. And so how can he kind of come to pass with growing up this way and what have you? I don't know. I also just think that like family is one of those things that like when I went back to rewatch 13 Going on 30 when I was trying to get inspired for the book, there's one moment in that movie where she calls her parents and they're on a cruise and she realizes at that moment that they haven't been in touch for a long time and that like, you know, she's become so unrecognizable to them. But like that whole storyline is never like
elaborated on.
Yeah, it's not elaborated on. Like her parents, I think, are at the wedding at the end, but she doesn't interact with them because that's not the goal of the movie. And then the movie kind of ends pretty quickly after that. And so I was like, that's gotta be weird, right? Like that has to be weird too, like to know that like that's your child and they grew up into this person that like maybe is unrecognizable to you. And I like wanted to sit with those feelings a little bit. Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, obviously this is a romance book, so we can't go any further without addressing like the biggest part of this storyline, which is the epic love story. When you were writing this story, were you like intentional from the beginning with the tropes you wanted to use? Like, tell me about trope writing and kind of the decision between, or the decision of rather, of like selecting specific tropes for different parts of this story.
Yeah. So I think I knew from the beginning, I mean, I knew from the beginning that this was going to be a friends to lovers romance. And I knew that because I wanted them to be roommates at the beginning. I wanted them to have a history. I wanted, Nolan to have like come into this love, like grown into it. Like they met in high school and Nolan wasn't like into Drew at the time. It like one of those like slow building, like slow burn moments where like the feelings kind of come bubble up to the surface. Cause I just feel like if you see somebody in a new light, sometimes like they move to New York together, they get this apartment and he's like, wait, what's happening? And so he develops those feelings. And then I also knew that come the future, Drew is going to hate his guts. And we find out why in the book, and Drew has a very good reason for disliking him. And I very much wanted this to be a book about forgiveness. I think that's what comes to the forefront of this book. It's about forgiving yourself for making poor choices. It's about forgiving others for things that they may have done, maybe unintentionally. And so the time slip element kind of threw a wrench into my usual approach to trope because again, it's that friends to lovers, enemies to friends. Like, yeah. I had to keep toying with the dynamic to make it authentic to their circumstances. And so I think what was most fun about writing New Adult versus my other books is that I broke the book into parts, and each part could probably be defined. I mean, it is defined in the book by like a crystal, but like they're all defined by a different like emotion that Nolan is like feeling at the forefront of that portion. And so like I got to explore Nolan remembering his feelings about Drew, Nolan kind of acting on those feelings, Nolan trying to get those feelings come to fruition. Oh shit, now it's the future. Now he hates me. I have to start this process all over, and I'm seven steps away from where I was before. Like, I love the falling part of a romance. I think that's, okay, this is actually a very controversial thing to say, but it's the falling part of the romance and the third act breakup. Those are my two favorite parts of a romance novel.
That's so
because they are the most, well, I just think that they're the most emotionally like,
harsh.
They're high. Like the stakes and the emotions are so big. Yeah. And so I got to write the falling part like three times in this book because they re-fall in love three times over the course of the book. And I found that really fun and also really challenging because they're different in every part of the book. They're different. They're different people essentially in every part of the book. So it kind of threw a wrench into the trope thing, but I mean, my approach to trope every time is how can I make this fun and gay? And then I go from there.
I love that. It's such a big, like you read this book and you don't think about all of like the thought that goes into it and all of the prep and all of the outlining and all of the, does this make sense? Like there's so much muscle that goes into a story like this and you're reading it and you just think it's like so heartwarming and it's really thought provoking and it's really interesting and it's making you think about like what would happen if I was in this position. But like, you're not thinking about the author that's actually like putting pen to paper and coming up with this whole story and like making it work. So like from draft one until the last submitted draft, like how many versions of the story did you write? Like how many iterations of this love story exist in your brain?
Oh my gosh. Quite a few of them. And I will say that like the weird thing about it is that like I had a lot of trouble. So like there are beats in a romance novel that a reader comes to expect, you know, first kiss, first whatever, whatever, and happily ever after. And I knew happily ever after was always in the cards for the book. It's a romance novel. But one of the things that I had a hard time with this book is because we're slipping in and out of time, how, like I said, I had to keep rewriting some of the beats again in a new and exciting way to keep you still engaged. And so for me, I ended up writing the book linearly. And then I was like, wait, okay, like, I think there needs to be this scene in this part and like this scene in this part. And how do I, there's a specific scene at Nolan's sister's wedding between Drew and Nolan on a balcony overlooking like the courtyard where the wedding is happening. There are like nine versions of that scene. Wow. Like, and it's not spoiling anything, but like in that version, the version of the scene that made it in the book, like they share a very nice kiss and it's this very sweet moment for them. But like, there were versions that didn't happen. There were versions that they had a very different conversation. There were versions that, like, I was just toying with this so, so much. And it sounds silly when I think about it now, but there's one scene in the book that felt like kind of the crux to me. And it's the scene where Nolan has an unfortunate accident at work. And
dying the other day when you posted that you're watching Uptown Girls, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I convinced my partner. So a lot of authors love to do playlists. Mm-hmm. And I usually write to white noise. I mean, I have songs that inspire books, but I usually write to white noise. And so I make watch lists of movies that inspired or are related to the book. And so I was like, we have to watch the movies that are on the list because
that's
I want
to. So
and so... Yeah, so he has this unfortunate situation with his nose, and Drew is taking care of him in this very sweet way, but they like have this weird relationship where they love to like they have this goal to make the other person laugh, like, which I think is just beautiful. Like every day they have to make the other person laugh in the most ridiculous way possible. And so Drew like enters the room in this ridiculous slutty nurse outfit with this tray of aspirin and this huge prop needle, and like he's listening to Drake and Rihanna's Take Care, and it's just so ridiculous and over the top. And like in that scene, they both get so close to like actualizing something that has been so unspoken and they don't realize. And so like for me, every single other part of the book had to come back to that. Like it had to come back to that feeling that existed in that book, that like crackling tension where like at any moment they could be like on each other, mm-hmm. but they're not gonna. And so I was like, how do I maintain that tension in every part of the book until, you know, I let them give themselves over to that yeah. feeling. But
So good. So obviously there's like steam in this book, but it's not like overly explicit. Like I wouldn't say that it's like a smutty, dirty book. Like it's you do it very like tastefully, I find. And I thoroughly enjoy a good steamy scene. That's kind of like my thing. I mean, I'll read any on the spectrum, but like I do appreciate, you know, a little open door moment. So tell me about writing steam and what that's like for you and how you feel over these last three books. Maybe that's evolved and kind of where you hope to take that part of your writing kind of in the future.
Yeah. Well, I always approach like every new book, I'm thinking to myself, like, who are these characters? What do they need to feel intimate and emotional and connected to the other person? And so like in Never Been Kissed, it made complete sense that there would be no steam in that book because these are not characters that are going to reach that point within the 300 pages this novel has. Mm-hmm. For something like Matthew Prince, where like they're literally sharing a room and a bathroom and Hector's just like hot as all hell, like Matthew's going to jump his bones. Like that's just going to be how the book goes. In New Adult, they have so much history with each other that I just knew I needed to manifest that in a way that was going to be intimate and sweet. But I kind of took like the Allison Cochran, Emily Henry approach, where it is like very much you're painting in watercolors, right? Like this is not oil on canvas where we're reading every detail. Like it is basically like the vibes mm-hmm. of what's happening. We know what's happening, but we don't know the beat by beat details. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they get steamy in a bookstore, they get steamy in a bedroom, like a little shower moment at the end. Like it is one of those things where like it just feels like a natural extension of their relationship. But like for something like The Fake Dating Game, which I have coming out in January, and then like the other books in the Harlequin line that I'm writing, they're geared towards younger folk, and they're also not like younger folk, but like 18 to 35 yeah. peoples. And like, they're very much like, they were like, we want this to be a high heat line. Like, is that something you're interested in? And so like these books, like the door's gone, right? Like I took the door off the hinges and I said, like, we're going to feed it to the shredder. And it was even super funny to me too, because like my editor had read Never Been Kissed, which had no steam in it, yeah. and was like, hey, like, would you be interested in exploring this? I think your voice would lend really well to a high heat story. Like, would you want to try it? And I was like, sure. And then I like turned in the book and my editor was like, oh my gosh, like everyone in the office is obsessed. I was afraid that they were going to tell me there was too much smut in here. And I was like, wait, are you kidding?
I'm gagging. I can't even. No, so you just understood the assignment too well.
I think that was the, like, there is like a whole, I'm like nervous about this scene being out in the world. And I feel like every author has one of these where they like take a risk in a sexual way, like in the book that they like don't know how it's going to read. But like in this book specifically, like, I wrote a scene that involves a cucumber. And like, I was like, I told my editor, because it's a grocery store themed book. And my editor was like, do what you gotta do. I'll read it and tell you if it's hot or not. And my editor was like, yeah, like we did a little book club, like among the imprint and everyone was like, no, it was hot. Like it was really hot. And I was like, oh, good. Like, okay, like this isn't a weird thing. And I mean, it all came from a place of like authenticity. I want to say that like there's very much a theme among queer men where like exploration happens in very interesting and
okay
you know kind of ways. And there is like, you know, you could see on like, I mean, not that Twitter is a thing anymore, but like if you ever went on gay Twitter amongst gay men, it's like it's a joke. It's like, oh, it's the cucumber, right? Like people know this thing. But I was like, I don't think people are gonna get it. And my editor was like, no, it doesn't matter if they get it, like it's hot, so it does its job and we move on. Like I was like, okay, so yeah, I have two high heat books that will be out in 2024.
I can't wait. So obviously this is what you're working on now, are these like steamy.
Yeah, well, so I mean, it strangely enough, I'm most likely going to have three books out in 2024. And
who has the time? Who are you?
I know. Not me, but I try.
It's so impressive. It's so impressive that you're able to do it and that you do it so well. Like, so many authors say, like, one a year is such a struggle. Like, it's hard to get one book out and to do it right. And like, you're just doing all of them right and so quickly. Like, you have such a talent.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think it's that ADHD that comes into play where it's like, okay, I want exciting. I'm harnessing it. But like, two of them are High Heat and one of them is Fade to Black.
Okay.
And that book is like, it's a magical Christmas book. So like, it is a Fade to Black book. And it's, again, I thought like, who's this book for? Who are these characters? What makes most sense? Like, are they going to be using a cucumber in the North Pole? Probably not, right? Like, so let's kind of harness that energy and decide what this book is supposed to be. So, but I love romance across the whole spectrum. And like, I've seen on Instagram some trends going around about clean and dirty. And I just want to, for the record, say that like, I stand for dirty. I stand for clean. I stand for somewhere in the middle. Like, romance is romance because it embraces all of those things. We can't have romance without all of them.
I love that. I feel like there's no better way to end this conversation than on that note. So thank you times a million for coming on my show. This was such a treat. I mean, I knew I was going to love talking to you because I just feel like I really resonate with everything you've written. And I like love your social media presence and I love when we DM. So I knew this was going to be like a fun time, but I wasn't expecting like all this insight and all this like background to you and your writing process. I wasn't expecting to be so intrigued, but I'm super impressed by you as I knew that I would be. And I'm just wishing you nothing but all of the best, like all the success ever. And I can't wait for these High Heat books. I will be the first person in line. And if you need an ARC reader or you just like want to be a nice friend and share them with me early, you know where I am.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. I'm going to be in the DMs of my editor being like, those like fancy influencer boxes, like, you know where it's got to go.
Exactly. It doesn't even need to be fancy.
Thank you so much.
It doesn't even be dependent. Like, you could send me like a Word doc. Like, it's fine.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. I'm just going to send you the Word doc. Amazing.